Alan Quinn Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 3, for Spring Semester 2017. Lecture 8, delivered on February 15, 2017. The title of this lecture is Applications of Interest Rate Theory.
Today, applications of interest rate theory. I'll begin with I think I dropped the term once in this class a while back, but I certainly didn't formally introduce it, and this time I'm not even really formally introducing it here. Well, actually, I kind of am. This is my imaginary dog. This dog is black and white, and the black are just these round circles. So I call that dog Spot, okay? Now, that has nothing whatsoever to do with the finance concept of spot versus forward. So get the dog out of your mind. I don't know why you're thinking about dogs anyway right now. I'll give you an example of finance in finance. Back in the day, when in oil and gas exploration, you could contract for the Coquelin driver or whoever was going to come out there to pick up the oil from your tanks, your reserve tanks, and you could agree to accept the spot price for the oil. You take spot. Or you could do a deal where you took a forward contract. You agree to a certain amount of money every time he comes out there for, let's say, 6 months, okay? So notice that with spot, you, the wildcatters, are taking the risk of price volatility in the market for the oil. And on the other hand, if you take forward, you are putting that risk on the purchaser of the oil. Now, to take that risk, you're going to get a lower price. But at the same time, you are avoiding the possibility that you're going to have oil prices drop hard on you. You also lose the opportunity to benefit if oil prices skyrocket. So it's really a question of how risky you want to be in your work. Now, in the business of doing that kind of oil well exploration and exploitation, you're already bearing the risks of the business, the risks of the rigs, the risks of the roughnecks getting hurt, the risks of damage to yourself and to people around you and all of that kind of stuff, the risk that you're not going to punch a decent well, no matter how hard you try, no matter how close to China you drill through the earth. So you're already taking risks, and a lot of times there are places where you don't want the risks of the oil prices. You just want to take the risks of being a wildcatter. That's what you do. You are not an oil speculator. You're an oil explorer and exploiter. Okay, or at least you pull the oil out of the ground if you can find any of the damn stuff. So spot means you take whatever is on the market, and forward means that you are taking a longer term agreement for a fixed price, lowering your risk but also lowering your expected return. I mean, that Coquelin driver is not stupid, or the Coquelin is not stupid. They're not going to give you a really big price if you're doing a forward contract. They're promising you you're going to get the same amount of money every time. So in other words, if oil prices drop through the floor, that oil company buying that oil from you is going to take an ass bath on you. But at the same time, they'll also take a really good chunk if oil prices go up and you're sitting there getting the same amount every month. Okay, now I bring that up because the idea of the forward rate or the forward contract is important all through finance and business itself. There will be times when you want to take risks and sometimes when you won't want to take risks. So when you don't want to take a risk, you're going to work on getting some kind of forward agreement. If you do want to take a risk, you're going to take a spot agreement. Now that's the background of spot versus forward. Now I'm going to use it in a somewhat less, businessy sense, if there's such a word. And I'm going to show you the idea of forward rates and how you can tease them out of financial data and see something that might be going on, what the market is telling you. Now, I want you to look at what I've got up here on the overhead is the today's yields on Treasury instruments. Today's yields on Treasury instruments. And if you look there, I'm going to work on a 1 year and a 2 year. Now, if you look at the 1 year, its interest rate is 0.0083. That's 0.83%, okay? That's for the 1 year. Now, for the 2 year, the interest rate, the annualized yield, is 1.22%. Which is 0.0122 in decimals. I'm going to show you a trick here. This is something that you're going to see a whisper of what the market thinks the future is going to be like. You see, the 2 year, a 1 year instrument would be essentially 1 plus 0.0083, okay, as an effective yield. And if I just did a simple 2 year, it would be 1 plus 0.0083 squared, and then I'd take the square root of it, which would bring me back to 0.0083. That would be if the yield on a 2 year were the same as the yield on a 1 year. If you look at this, they're not the same. So in other words, that 2 year, and I'm going to write the math, and I'm not going to explain the math. It kind of comes to you as time goes on why I do this. But I'm going to say, all right, there is the 1 plus 0.0083 times a 1 plus an unknown yield for the second year. This would be the first year. This would be the second year. And then if I were to take those two together, the way the market's saying it now, that should be 1 plus 0.0122 squared. In other words, that 2 year composite should be a rate times a rate. Watch what happens when I work this out to find out what the yield on the second leg, the second year, is. In other words, the 2 year should be the 1 year now, the spot, times the 1 year forward, which I'm going to put as R1. This is R0. So in other words, it's 1 plus R0 times 1 plus R1 equals 1 plus 0.0122 squared. That's what it should be. So I know R0. I found that one. So now I'm going to tease out R1 and see what it is. So I take 1 plus R1 would equal 1.0122. And again, I do appreciate that it's going to look 1.0083. Squared. Oh, that's squared. I'm sorry, squared. Talking. Again, I appreciate you. If you don't see why I'm doing it this way, trust me, it comes to you as time goes on when we do more interest rate work. But let's do this right now. Let's clear this and do 1.1, 1.0122 divided by 1.0083 equals. Oops, I screwed it up. I sure did. I'm trying to talk. I wasn't even talking that time. 1.0122 squared divided by 1.0083 equals. So, in other words, 1 plus R1, the 1 year forward rate, forward 1 year, is 1.01612. 1.01612. So in other words, the 1 year forward rate is 0.01612, which means that the forward rate, the second leg of a 2 year treasury instrument, the market says it is yielding on its second year of its life 1.612%. So in other words, the composite 2 year rate, which is a blend of the spot at the spot rate for the 1 year, for this 1 year treasury, and a forward rate 1 year out for a year, the 1 year out for a year is actually saying 1.612%. If you look at just the annualized yield on a 2 year, in other words, you take whatever it is, the square root of it, you're going to get 1.22%. But if you look at what the market's saying, the second year of a 2 year leg is, if the first year is 0.83%, then the second year would have to be 1.61% in order to create a composite 2 year rate of 1.22%. Again, let me say that again, just so that it kind of begins to, and I, like I said, I do this over and over, and it begins to sink in as I do it more and more. But what I'm saying here is, again, that if a 2 year treasury bill is yielding on an annualized basis 1.22%, but if the first year is only 0.83%, then the second year, the forward rate for the second year of that treasury would have to be 1.612%. For the combined rate of them to be 1.22%. Go. Like the average. Not the average. Oh, that's the thing, is it's not an average. Do you remember in your math in high school or here, were you taught about the difference between an arithmetic average and a geometric average? Okay, an arithmetic average, you add them up and divide by the number. The geometric average is where you take square roots and third roots and all that kind of stuff, what you've seen me do a couple of times already in this class. Those are, so it's an average, but it's the geometric average. In other words, well, let me ask this. If you can, see if you can interpret this. And it's okay if you're going to struggle with it. It's okay. But let me see if you can interpret what I'm doing. Ma'am, I have just calculated that the 1 year spot rate is 0.83% on a risk-free treasury bill. I've calculated that, and I saw that the 2 year geometric average for a 2 year was 1.22%. But for that to happen, the market is saying that the second year of the 2 year instrument has an interest rate of 1.612% per year. Do you see if that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Good thing?
Actually, it's a very bad thing. Simply because they're saying that whereas interest rates right now for 1 year are less than 1%, 0.83%, they're saying that interest rates for 1 year a year from now will be 1.6%. So in other words, if I were to look at this as a series of spot and forwards, looking at just the yields, for 1 year, I'd have a little less than 1%. For 2 years, I'd have about 1.2%. Just a nice little arch. But if I look at it in terms of spot and forward, if this is R1, R0, R1, the forward rate 1 year out is like that. In other words, the market says right now, for a year, we'll take 0.83%. But if you come to us in a year from now and want an interest rate, we think it's going to be 1.6%. In other words, close to double what it is now. Begin to see what I'm trying to get, what I'm trying to show you here, is that hidden in those yields there are actually forward interest rates that are telling a different story from what the average will tell you. And this goes back to the point you were making. The forward rates, when I talk about an average, I am missing a whole lot about what's happening in the end. Okay, if I have average of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the average of that is 3. But if the last one is a 5, that's probably, the average is not telling me enough about that last number and what could happen next. That's what the forward rates do for us. They allow us to see what is going on farther out. Now, I'm going to do one more for you here just to see how serious the market thinks interest rate rises will be. How serious the market thinks interest rate rises will be. Okay, let me see here. The yield on a 3 year is 1.49. So now I know that 1 plus 0.0083 times 1 plus 0.01612 times the forward rate on the second year to the third year should create a composite rate on a 3 year treasury of 1 plus 0.0149 to the third power. And again, I'm just doing this over and over, and it begins to kind of sink in what I'm after here. Okay, that would mean that R2 is 1.0149 cubed over 1.0083 times 1.01612 minus 1. So let's see what the market thinks interest rates are going to do on the third year, from 2 to 3. We see that the market now thinks that the forward rate 1 year out is going to be seriously higher than the year rate for the coming year. So let's go and do it one more time, just so you can see this, maybe get used to it. I'm going to do 1.0149 to the third power divided by, and I'm going to open parenthesis, 1.0083 times 1.01612, close parenthesis, equals, ow, wait, oh, that was ugly. Let's try that again. 1.0149 to the third power divided by, open parenthesis, 1.0083 times 1.01612, close parenthesis, there we go, minus 1. Ow! Oh! Go. Now let's try it again. See if you got it. Do you got it? Do you see what the? Tell me what you see on that on the forward rate 2 years out. Yeah. You see, you got an upward strike on it. Not just next year do the markets think interest rates are going to pop, but they think the year after that they're going to pop more. Within this forward rate structure is steeply upward sloping. This is not the maturity premium. Now, the maturity premium, I want to point out here, make sure you understand, the maturity premium, in other words, longer rates are going to be higher than shorter rates because of interest rate uncertainty. This is not that exactly. This is actually saying, okay, even though we see the maturity premium, 0.83, 1.22, 1.49, oh my, there's a real problem in here because that's not telling the story. The story is that the one-year rate coming up for 1 year is 0.83%. The market is going to accept less than a percent to buy treasury bills, the safest things on earth. But then the market is saying, hiding in the data, that in the second year, from year 2 to 3, from 1 year from today, for a year, if we lend you money, government, 1 year from today, for a year, we're thinking that we're going to have to charge you 1.61%, almost double what we're charging, what we're lending to you now at. And a year more, if we lend to you for a year, we're going to probably be charging you about 2.02%. That means that interest rates at the safest level, at the level of treasury bills, short-term treasuries, is going to be going up, and it's going to be going up at a relatively brisk rate. The problem is that there is no four-year. I'd have to do 5 years, so I'd have to do a square root of the composite on the five-year forward. But still, you're going to see if you do the whole thing out there, you're going to see that the market thinks interest rates are going to go up. Now, the next thing is, get away from this for a while, and I'll bring it back up later. We'll just keep doing it until you're used to it. Interest rates rising. Is that good for business or bad for business, according to what we've learned so far? Bad. It's bad for consumers, too, to the extent that if you borrow to have things, you're going to have to pay more for those things. It's also bad for businesses because what happens is the cost of capital goes up. As interest rates go up, the cost of capital, borrowed money or money that you earn, is going to be more expensive as time goes on. Excuse me. So what we see here are the signs, the clear signs, that there is trouble on the horizon for the American economy. You don't have to be a PhD in economics to know how to read these tea leaves. I'm showing you now the different ways that we can look at an economy and look at what the market thinks is going to happen. Interestingly enough, what the market thinks is going to happen is your best guess at what is going to happen, because the market is nothing but the sentiment of the investors in it. Now, interest rates going up is great for investors to the extent that, okay, well, we're doing okay. We can invest our money and get higher yields. But at the same time, businesses are on the other side of that, and consumers are on the other side of that, saying, "Well, that's wonderful, but we're not going to borrow money. We're not going to do these projects because interest rates are going up. We're going to cut back." Now, I'm going to show you something here before I go on. The Federal Reserve publishes a number of different content things. And at the level of the national, at the Board of Governors, they have three different publications that are biggies, that are periodicals. There's the Green Book, the Blue Book, and the Beige Book. Now, the one that is interesting for us is, for the purposes of this, is the Beige Book. The Beige Book begins with each of the district banks assessing the economic climate in its district. They don't look anywhere else. They look at their district. They talk to the businesses. They talk to the government. They talk to the public. They try to find out what the sentiment is, what the sales are, what the plans are, what inventory levels are being intended, what projects are being planned, and talking to the bankers. Okay, do you see a lot of people coming in for loans? What do you expect? Are people going to be buying houses? Are people going to expect to be buying cars? They talk to community leaders. Okay, what is the sentiment in your neighborhood? What's going on with people? How are they concerned about jobs? What's going on with them? Okay? So I'm going to show you a beige book. I want the January, the most recent one. Now, after all of the different district banks have put together their reports, then it is put into a national summary by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors in Washington, D.C. And then after the national summary, they bring it down to saying, all right, here is it. It is region by region, what the district banks told us was going on. Now, if you go on here, and just I won't take much of your time, but what I'm doing is I'm trying to show you how to begin to look at economic and financial data. And you have to read between the lines to a certain extent. And the first sentence says, report, this is the January 18th, 2017 Beige Book. Reports from the 12 Federal Reserve districts indicated that the economy continued to expand at a modest pace across most regions from late November through the end of the year. Okay, let me restate that. Let me reiterate that. The economy continued to expand at a modest pace across most regions. Now it's time to read and to translate what you have read. Madam, is this a very exciting, very happy face? Should they be putting happy faces around this? Is it something that is very positive or maybe not so positive? What word would you say? There are a couple of words in there. What is a trigger word that makes you a little bit concerned about what they're trying to tell you?
Modest.
Bingo. Bingo. Modest. Okay. Modest in our terminology. We don't like to scare people. So when I say, well, there is a modest influx of zombies. Hide your women and hide your horses. Okay. That's what we're saying. I know, right? Yeah. As you try to get your nerves back in you. Okay, that is a term. Now, the other thing that bothers me is that word most of the regions. The one that is clear is that modest. But the other word that bothers me a little bit is most. Well, your body does. Well, most of your body doesn't have cancer. Okay? And I mean, if we just ignore that nodule, you're good. all over the rest of you. Do you see the point that I'm trying to get at here? Is that when you read these, we don't scream. I mean, I do in the classroom, but when I'm, and of course, I'm a conspiracy theorist. No one takes me seriously anyway, so screw them. I can say what I want. But if I am in a dignified setting, I don't just say idiotic things. And I do. Why am I lying? But respectable people who are paid very good money to be respectable, which I'm not, don't just scream and say it's all going to hell in a handbasket, especially early on. This has these troubling signs in it. Growth in the, it's hard to say, but there is a little bit. If you begin to look, labor markets were reported to be tight or tightening during the period. Employment growth ranged from slight to moderate, okay? And wages increased, there's that word again, modestly. Do you see what they're saying? They're saying, all right, most districts, there's still a growth in employment. However, it is slight to moderate. Now, a rule of thumb, in order for the American economy to continue to expand, the number of new jobs created each month, well, actually, let me see if you know this or if you could take a stab. Sir, how many new jobs must the U.S. economy create each month in order to continue to grow at a reasonable pace? You don't know. Any guess? Well, actually, you're not bad. That would mean the economy is sick at 100,000. I would say, depending on whom you talk to, it's between 135 and 150. 150,000 new jobs every month have to be created in order for the economy to keep growing robustly. I am worried at 135. I begin to have my back leg go up and down at 100,000. Now, if they're saying slight to modest, they are trying to say it's below the target for a healthy economy. So you're seeing all kinds of warning signals in the beige book that there are problems on the horizon. You're seeing it in the forward rates that I showed you, that the markets are seeing trouble on the horizon. So there you go. You can believe that everything's okay and, you know, it's time for Teletubbies and all that kind of stuff and My Little Pony. Or you can take the signal seriously, and what does that mean for you? You've got about a year, 2 years until you graduate. That will put you right into the middle of the trough of a deep recession. Okay, now moving on. Everyone, wait. Wait, USOB. Don't leave us there. Okay. No, but this is not beyond you. You're not stupid. You're our cream of the crop. You're the educated, God help us, of this nation. And so what you're seeing is what most people, I think I'm going to be able to afford my beer, or always thinking, the economy is going to hell in a handbasket. No, it wasn't. Not for the last 6 years. It was doing damn strong. I mean, it was a really good economy. But now it's time to pay the piper. And also, I want to make sure that I don't forget. We'll look at the beige book. The new beige book will be out in just a few days. And so we're going to look at it again. And it'll be a fresh look and see what the Fed says. My guess is that it's going to be the same tone, but just a little bit darker on the beige book that will be published. It might be on Friday or Monday. I can never keep track of it anymore. But it's a great resource for knowing how to be an investor, knowing how to be a person who is going to be out there looking for a job. Okay, now the next thing that I want to do here, and we'll do forward rates again and again until you get kind of used to them and all that stuff, but practical applications of what I've shown you the last few lectures, and especially in the last lecture. carve your dreams. I'm actually worried about the car some people say is their dream car, but what's your dream car? Not dream car. What's your car that, you know, it's not going to, it might not be incredible, but at least it's going to, it's not so bad that you won't be able to breathe driving it around.
Corvette.
Of course. Okay, we're going to do a vet. Okay. Okay, 55 450. Okay. That's cool. It's good. We're all good, okay? 55 450. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you on the Pearson calculator, which, and you can download the app for your phone too, how you do that. Let's say that we're going 55, 450 out the door. Let's say that you negotiate out the door, OTD, 55 grand on the vet, okay? Now, we're going to do this one on a six-year loan at 5.59% APR. Now, again, really quick, let me do the effective yield just so you see that, let me do that trick again. The effective is going to be 1 plus 0.0559 over 12 to the 12th power minus 1. That's the effective yield, and that's better to do that one with a scientific calculator, really. I mean, it's just like open parenthesis, 1.0559 divided by 12, close the parenthesis, to the, whoa, I didn't mean to do that. That was really stupid. Wow. 1 plus 0.0559 divided by 12, close the parenthesis. Do you see what I did there? I mean, that would have gotten me the wrong answer because I did the addition before the division there. And that's what happens if you use a business calculator because they don't know hierarchy of arithmetic operations. Okay, to the 12th power minus 1, 5.74% APR. I'm sorry, effective yield. I mean, this, once you get the hang of it, it's really easy. And you can see in the your online homework quiz and test, you have to do an effective yield. It's really almost a joke once you get the hang of it. Just make sure you don't do that stupid thing I just did. Now, let's get to the big show here. Now, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to always hit the reset button, just to make sure that the buffers are cleared, whether you're on the calculator on your phone or the one here in Pearson, which is, for God's sake, if you have to use formulas, if you are any of you really into the heavy formulas instead of using the calculator to do things? I mean, I don't have any people who are like Rain Man in here. Okay, good. Now, we're going to do a 6 year, so that's going to be a 72 month. 72 is going to be the N, okay? Okay, N. Okay, so now the interest rate I'm going to do, I over Y, is going to be 5.59 divided by 12 equals, and that's the I over Y, okay? I always hit the button. I don't know why I do that. I always hit the button before I do the calculation. You have to do it backwards. Okay, now the present value, that's the price value, what you're going to borrow. And in this case, that's going to be 55,000. And don't forget, always, for some reason, these calculators expect present values to be negative. PV, okay? Now, all you have to do at this point is compute the payment. Geez, Louie! $900.90? Boy, that 90 cents is going to kill me on that. Okay, there's your damn vet right there, okay? you'll live in your car, you'll eat Vienna sausages and all that kind of stuff. Okay, there's a $900 car for you, okay? Okay, now, that's not the only thing. But however, you can just quickly slam this out. You got a calculator on your phone. What I really love about this is that you can get this app for your phone and then you can just pound this out anytime you want. Okay, so now, by the way, also, in a case like this is kind of stupid, but sometimes this timeline, if you've got an uneven cash flow, you can put in cash flow 1, cash flow 2, cash flow 3. You can do all kinds of weird cash flows, find their present values, future values, and it's a whole lot easier than if you try to do that on your own. But what I want to do here is I want to hit the amort table. Now, I want you to notice what that amort table does. Do you see it? Yeah, I want to make sure you do. Let me turn off this light. They're kind of glaring. If I have to, I can make the calculator a little bigger. And it's still a little small, but I can make it bigger. Here, hang on. This tells you your balance month by month, how much of your payment's going to go to principal. In other words, how much of your principal and how much is going to accumulated principal and how much is going to go to accumulated interest. So in other words, that first payment you make, that $900.90 payment, of that $644.69 will knock off the balance you owe the bank. The remainder, the $256.21, that's pure interest. You're just giving the bank that for their generosity in lending you the money. Now, the thing that is useful for this, and this is part of financial planning, is knowing when you can, maybe even should, unload your car. So let's say that with a vet, at 1 year, this vet here, resale value, at 1 year, this vet is going to be 40 grand. At 2 years out, it's going to be 36 grand. At 3 years out, it's going to be 33 grand. At 4 years out, it begins to get really out of technology at 28 grand. And at 5 years out, it's going to be about 22 grand. If you haven't crashed it into a wall driving like a blind trout by then. Okay, so now let's see, could we unload this car? Are we upside down or right side up in 1 year? The term upside down means that you owe more than the value of the asset. Upside down means you owe more than the value of the asset. And if we look at 12 months, you owe $47,740. Your resale is $40,000. So are you upside down or right side up? You are upside down. I mean, you are so upside down, you can see your cheeks. Okay, so now, let's go out 2 years. Are you upside down or right side up based on resale value I gave you? Okay, now you can think about this number that I've just looked at here. That's 38, you're upside down about $2,500, okay? Now let's go out to 36 months and see what's going on. 29, so what do you see? Upside down or right side up? The right side up. In other words, it's probably in the later part of that second year, third year, that you are right side up on the loan, and that would be when it would probably be the first opportunity you could have to sell. Now, as that car begins to drop in value, though, at year four, we're still going to be okay. 48 months, you're okay. You got 28 grand for the value, and you've got $20,000 that you still owe. Now, at 60 months, did I do 60? Yeah. You got 10 grand and the car is holding 22. So you notice, of course, as time goes on, with this car, and there, by the way, places you can go to find out projections on resale value by year over year. In this case, you're going to be building equity in the car after 3 years, definitely, probably in the late 2 years. If it's a 17, you're probably, when model year 20 comes out, 21, you could go back in and you'll be right side up on the loan. And the important part of that is that you go into the dealer, you know that you're right side up. Don't let the dealer say, well, you're upside down on this, so we're going to have to fold some of that cost into the price of this new car for you. Don't let them do that. If you have calculated this, if you've done the amortization table, you know that when you are gold, and here you're gold at about definitely inside of year three. So you go in year three, year four, there's no problem with you getting more than the value of this car, and you can buy a new vet. And there will be a point where actually you'll be buying new at a lower net price with resale turned over than you did with the old car that you started with. This is one of the things that we can do in financial planning, by the way. If you tell me this is the kind of car that I want, we can figure out for you how, as time goes on, you can flip the car over for the new model, and slowly, after over a period of, let's say, three or four new cars, by the time you get to the fifth new car, you are hardly paying anything at all. You can pay it out of the cash in your pot in your bank account. That's something that we can do. So that is amortization, and it all begins. Do the calculation of the payments, and then hit the amort button, and you can tell what your balance is as the loan goes forward through time. And now let me see if I can figure out how to back that back down. Okay. Okay, so now, let me see if I actually File Explorer. Did I do it? Let me do this real quick. I thought I did this. Now you can do the same trick with the TI-83, apps, finance, and all of that kind of stuff. TVM solver, time value of money payment, all that kind of stuff, time value of money. But the TVM solver is where you would start to do this. And as time, once you've done that, then there is a trick you can use to go in and create the amortization table here. The thing of it is, although the TI-83 Plus is a great calculator for finance, it is actually not as visually satisfying as that Pearson financial calculator was. The Pearson just lays out this beautiful table, amortization table. This one wouldn't do that. So I just want to point out to you that you can do it, but I'm going to encourage you not to do it that way. Here's another thing that you can do, though. I'm going to get this one off the board here. And finally, app. Okay. And just very quickly, I'm just going to do this. You can do it with Excel as well. And probably the best place for you to start would be with the amount here on this, something like this. And you can do your own thing with these. But at the same time, rate 0.. Now here's where I always screw it up. I think you put it in as a percentage. And you have to make this an absolute reference. You hit F4, and that means that it will stay on that value for as many as you want, okay? Oh, number of periods. Duh, 60. This one was 72. And I'm going to check to make sure that I'm doing this right here. Okay, let's try that again. Just in case you want to do it though. There we go. It is the decimal, not the percentage version. Yeah.
Okay, so what are you looking at to see what's
up to there? Okay, I'll go through it here again. The first thing I'll do here is equals 0.0559/12 times that amount and then the principal would be equals that the payment minus how much went to the interest. Remember, debt before equity. And then how much? Wait. Equals 900. It does it as a negative. I'm glad I'm showing you this. It's a negative. So in other words, I would have to do the negative of. Okay. Now equals that minus that. Okay, and then that one equals that for the second period. Okay, so now, actually, I'm going to add in one more here. This answers your question. Okay, insert month. I don't like doing this because this is a waste of time to a certain extent. Month zero, okay. Month zero. One. And then what I, one. And then I'm going to take this down 72 months. And then what I'm going to do from here is just simply crank it out. It's just a copy and paste from here. Okay. And then I can just do these all. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Should be able, and your reality, and your check is, oops. I should have done that period one. Okay, anyway, Now, your upside down is when I look at my resale value against what my balance is on the loan. So at 12 months, I still owe $47,000 on the loan. I could sell the car for $40,000, so I'm upside down. I'm in a losing position. Do you see that? You're okay with that, right? Okay, so now I go to year two at 24 months, and I still owe $38,600 on it, $38,700. And I'm still a little upside down because I can sell for only $36,000 and I owe $38,600 and change on it. But once I get out here to about somewhere here within that year, at about month 36, somewhere in there, around there, I have a balance on this of about $29,000, $29,700, $29,800, but the car's value is $33,000. So I can now sell the car at a profit. I'm right side up. The asset is worth more than what I owe on it. So at this point, I'm right side up. Are you okay on that? Okay, he's still looking a little suspiciously at me. Let me fix this right now, too. If you want to do a screenshot of this, hang on here. Let me do something real quick for you. Love cell phones for some reasons. And I can delete that. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go through here. And I'm going to put the formulas up. If you want to do a snapshot of each of the formulas, if you want to do it, pull out your cell phone and just take a photograph of it. It's right there. Or you can just write down the formulas. Once you get it started, it goes on its own. Do you see how I just copied and pasted? The only thing you have to do is the first 2 months on your own, okay? Now, if you want to do that, and then there's that one. And if you want to write that formula down for the interest. Yeah.
So how do you
come up with a resale? That's what you look in Blue Book. There are several resources online that are very good for this kind of thing. And they're actually fairly accurate, too, over time. One of the interesting things that happened when I was researching to buy a new car, I looked at these ones like the Toyotas. They hold value really well, of course. The Subaru Forester, the Toyota RAV4, the Toyotas, I can't remember the name of the slightly bigger one, hold value really well. Then you looked at some of the others, and they just did not hold value. Based upon history, they were not holding value hardly at all. Yeah. Do you have Excel on your calculator?
The what?
Do you have Excel on your calculator?
Well, no. The 990, how did you get
that? Oh, that was the one that I got. Okay, in Excel, there's a function called the payment function. But if you don't have that on your calculator, have you got that app, that Pearson app for financial calculator app? Get it on your phone. It's an app. I mean, there's a free version. And then there's one for like $399. I bought the $399 version because I'm just butch. And then you can just rapidly calculate that, do that calculation. See right here. Now let me reset and I'll show you real fast. 72-month loan at 5.59% divided by 12 months per year. Don't forget that. That's I percent. N is, I got to do that again, 62, N. And then the present value is how much you're going to borrow, in this case, $55,000, negative. And don't forget to give it a negative. Say that's your present value, and then compute your payments. There they are, that fast. Then there's a way that you can do it. Did they teach you how to calculate payments in your accounting class? You can do it with a table. There's a tables approach with these massive books of tables. And then there's then I can actually show you the formula way to do it. Anyway, okay. Now, there's one other thing you can do. If you want to make a table that will always do this calculation for you, over here, you can write amount, loan amount, and then your APR. And now, in this case, I'm going to write the loan amount as 55 grand for this loan. And then the APR is 5.59%. And then I can simply do an absolute reference equals that. And then I hit F4 and it makes it absolute so it doesn't change as you move down the cells. And then to make it even more powerful, I can say, okay, I can just say, instead of that division that I did there, I can just say that over 12. Absolute reference divided by 12. And then if I want to do it number of years, let's say 6 years, I can even go further and make it just essentially that times 12. Well, I was just, never mind. I'm but you can actually do these. Apparently, I didn't do something as a reference. Yeah, that's fine. Oh, I see. That's got to be, I didn't do the absolute reference there. Okay. Oops. One more time. Let's try it. Every time I try to do this, I screw it up. Okay. That APR right there as an absolute reference. You know what? Screw that. I was fine the first time doing it like I'm doing it the ape way. Okay, going back to the Cro-Magnon way, there's your table right there. Okay? That's all I have for you today. I thank you. Go home, stupid Excel. I miss the old days.